interesting case from a number of perspectives. It's interesting because both Mr. Thomas and I came into this case after a fair amount of information and record had been established. Both of us have differing views as to what occurred or actually took place at the underlying level. I think it could be digested down to two key issues. Number one, whether there was an assent to extend the automatic approval deadline by Kauai Springs, and number two, the scope and breadth of the Commission's public trust doctrine duties and responsibilities when confronted with its constitutional, its statutory, its code obligations when other agencies basically, for lack of a better term, punted their responsibilities or duties. How did this start before the Planning Commission? An application was filed in July of 2006. There was a public hearing. That's in the record on August 8, 2006, and Mr. Satterfield was there on behalf of his business entity, Kauai Springs. A month and a half later, September 26, another public hearing, Mr. Satterfield was also there. November 14, another public hearing, and Mr. Harvey Cohen, an attorney, was there with Mr. Satterfield. Another hearing on November 28, 2006, and again, Harvey Cohen, an attorney, with Mr. Satterfield. January 23rd, 2007, another public hearing. Mr. Cohen was there as an attorney with Mr. Satterfield. And finally, in February, I believe it's 13th of 2007, the attempt at a reconsideration, Mr. Cohen was there along with Mr. Satterfield. Why is this significant as to the assent to extend the automatic approval deadline? Because at no time did Mr. Satterfield or Mr. Cohen raised this particular issue. In fact, as clear in the record, Mr. Cohen was attempting to negotiate, basically changing the application, modifying things, and trying to work it out. And at no time, an attorney never mentioned this particular issue. There were attempts to do things along the way, and the record is replete with attempts by Kauai Springs, either through Mr. Satterfield or Mr. Cohen, to try to appease some of the issues that were being raised throughout.
Mr. Minkin, is there any procedure before the Planning Commission to formally amend an application that would restart the automatic approval deadline?
Unfortunately, at that time, there was not. And this case and some other cases that the courts have dealt with, dealing with the Kauai Planning Commission, has modified and changed their rules and procedures. Because in the old days, what happened, Mr. Satterfield, in July, dropped off his papers, and it was stamped. And for some reason, they started that as the triggering date of the application, when in fact, it is now, based upon it comes in, they'll mark it received, and it goes out to other agencies for opinions and comments, which is their statutory responsibility. And only when those other agencies come back, they now say it has been received and starts the timetable.
The parties in this case, agree, I take it, that as far as I can tell from the briefs, that July 5 of 06 was the receipt of the application date. Is that the beginning period in your mind as
Correct.
To when the automatic approval
right.
deadline?
We don't dispute that as far as it, under the policies and procedures that were in place then, it came in, dropped off by Mr. Satterfield, stamped, and then the county started timing it from that point forward.
From the briefs, it appears that none of the parties are disputing that the Planning Commission, and certainly you are not disputing, that the Planning Commission has a public trust obligation in light of the constitutional provisions in Article 11.
Correct.
So how can the automatic approval deadlines live side by side with the trust obligations?
I think that's an interesting question, and it's something that we really haven't focused on because from my perspective, I've divided it up into two arguments, but I think that that overreaching and overarching constitutional provision, which then goes to the state and then to the subparts, which includes the county and then the Planning Commission, that's what has to control. I mean, the legislature sets up something in an attempt to streamline the process to not hold up people's development rights, but at the end of the day, what does it get back to? It gets back to what was there under common law, what is there under case law, what is there under the Constitution, what is there under the code of the county as to its public trust responsibilities. And that actually is an interesting question, and I appreciate it because it focuses really what does the county do with its public trust responsibilities, duties to investigate, duties to research, and make those determinations? So it, I agree with you, it does present a conflict, and I don't think it's, I didn't address it in my brief. I don't think Apelli addressed it, but it is something that's definitely out there that should pause, give you pause for concern.
Mr. Minkin, how does the commissions or the agency, generally the agency's responsibility to consider the public trust dovetail with the burden of proof in front of it, the part of the parties in front of it?
I think that, and what our position is, that the burden of proof remains with the applicant. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the commission, based upon its public trust doctrine, duties and responsibilities, has to keep the applicant basically responding all the time, producing that type of information. And that type of information can't be produced in, well, it may be type of situation, unanswered questions, conclusory statements. And I believe that what happened at the circuit court level is that the circuit court basically turned it back to the planning commission, saying it's your burden. No, it's the applicant's burden to do this and bring it to the satisfaction, because what we have here is an overriding constitutional provision that permeates everything. And while it's been through case law, and Kelly brings it even closer, because the Kelly case is interesting because it tells the, it told the counties that you have this duty and responsibility. You just can't say, well, oh no, it's not mine, it's the state's. Can't do that. And Kelly case was interesting also because that was basically permits for land, but it dealt with the repercussions of those permits with ocean water. And that is, to me, is completely analogous to this situation, because we're dealing with permits to land, but the county, based upon the Constitution, based upon its own statutes, based upon its own code, has to take into account water. Water, even if they're dealing with buildings, water that may not be part of the process, may not be part of what's being sought with the land use, with the special permits, those sorts of things, but it has to take into account the water. And I think that's where the county struggled in this particular case, because their protocol was to send out to other agencies, the agencies that they thought would have the responsibility.
On that point, I thought you said a minute ago that the agency had statutory responsibilities or obligations to solicit information from other agencies?
Correct.
Okay, so how does that dovetail with the responsibility of the applicant, for example, to provide information sufficient to support their petition?
Well, the applicant has to provide sufficient information that the other agencies can make a reasoned determination. Mm-hmm. And what we see in this particular case is that, for example, from the Water Commission, they're basically saying, assuming these three questions or issues are true, this is what we would believe. And the same thing with the PUC. Assuming that these are true, we have no issue with it being a public utility for Kauai Springs, but it comes back to, is Grove Farm a public utility that then has to be looked at, because that's where the water was coming from the Knutson Trust land through a pipe that was manufactured and controlled by Grove Farm, and is that, because it's going to Kauai Springs and others, is that a public utility? So none of those questions were sufficiently answered that any of those other agencies were able to opine really one way or another. They were basically making assumptions that if this was true, then this may be okay, but that still didn't give, based upon the communications and the information that was sought, comfort to the Planning Commission at the end of the day. And that's the problem. If the other agencies don't do their job, whose job and responsibility is it? And it's the Planning Commission.
Point of clarification, if you would, in the record, I see references to Grove Farm, especially vis-a-vis the PUC letter, but is it established in the record what Grove Farm's extent of involvement is here? I mean, the source of the water is owned, as I understand, by the EA
Knutson
Trust.
Correct.
Okay, so where does Grove Farm come into this? Is it established in the record?
What's in the record is that Mr. Satterfield and the representative of Grove Farm showed up indicating that they have a pipeline that dates back, or the transportation of water dates back to before 1900 with the plantations. And Grove Farm has that pipeline today that provides water not only to Kauai Springs but to other residents.
Okay, so they own the pipeline and
yes.
they control the pipeline.
Yes.
Right.
Mr. Minkin, what does the commission do when it has a case where it doesn't have enough information, it needs more time, and time is running towards the automatic approval if they don't act? What is the commission supposed to do?
In this particular case, I would submit they did exactly what they were supposed to do.
Well, that's if there was assent, you know, to extend the deadlines, and that point's in contention. Could that have been avoided, that issue? I mean, we have to accept your argument that the settlers, you know, consented to this delay, and
I
think that's up in the air whether they did or not.
Right.
The way you presented it sounded more like to me as a waiver argument than an argument of agreeing to an extension. But, you know, if you're counsel to the commission, you're on the ground floor, you see the clock running, you think you need more time, what do you advise the commission to do? Deny the application without prejudice? Ask the parties that agree to an extension, otherwise it's going to be denied? What's the commission supposed to do?
If I was there at this point in time, I would have recommended that they deny it at this point in time, subject to, without prejudice, for the applicant to then bring it forward again.
What are the procedures for bringing it forward again under the Planning Commission rule?
File another application.
Is there a time requirement in terms
None
of?
None whatsoever.
They don't have to wait a particular period of time? Is that under the applicable regulatory scheme back relevant to this?
That's my recollection that it is, that there is nothing that says that, you know, that you bring it in one day, and if you withdraw it yourself, then you're now barred for 30 days or 60 days. It doesn't work the same like in bankruptcy court. If it dismisses a bankruptcy filing, that you have 180 days, you can't file it again. There are certain things that are out there that do that, but that's the type of situation that the Planning Commission is confronted with all the time. People bring things in. There's interaction between the Planning Department because that's the first level. Things are going back and forth, and that's why the procedures now have changed literally 180 degrees, that it's not deemed accepted when it first gets dropped off. All of these other requirements, including the dialogue with the department, go back and forth with the applicant as well as with the other agencies, and from that point forward, the timetables or the clock starts ticking.
Under the, there's three permits that are at issue here,
yes.
right? Use permit, class four zoning permit, and then the special permit. The criteria for the Planning Commission to consider whether to approve these permits, I think the use permit and the special permit criteria seem to be in agreement between the parties given the briefing. But the criteria for the class four permit, where would you cite to in terms of what the Planning Commission looks to for the class four?
I believe that the class four permit basically goes back to the standards for the use permit show up in 8-20.5, and I believe there's a reference, and then there's a reference back to one of the Section 8-19 that deals with the land use permit, the land use for permit.
So my question, though, is does the Planning Commission basically look then at the use permit criteria in terms of whether to approve then the Class 4 permit?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Yes. If there are no further questions, I'll try to get back to where I was with permission of the court. Pelley says that HRS section 91-13.5 does not explicitly or implicitly prohibit extensions upon assent of the applicant. And I believe that that's an interesting argument, but we have these types of situations throughout our law. There are constitutional prohibitions. There are statutory prohibitions. They can be either consented to, assented to, or even waived. For example, you have the right against self-incrimination. That's paramount, but you can waive that right. So what do we have to show that there was an assent based on the actions? And I believe that the case law that we've cited, both federal court here as well as from Pennsylvania, indicate that you have to look at the facts. And I think I highlighted those particular facts based upon who was present at those numerous hearings, those numerous meetings. And I would just end and say that after these purported deadlines, on November 14th, 06, after the two purported deemed approved deadlines, Kauai Springs sought to amend its application to reduce usage in the bans. What also is significant that at February 13th, in the minutes, which are on the underlying record beginning at page 1 through approximately page 6, Mr. Cohen mentions that he's going to go to court because he thinks what was done was unfair, too drastic, and harsh. Never once says that, oh, by the way, it's done already. We have our permits. They're deemed approved. So, yes, Judge Foley, you indicated that I said maybe it was like a waiver, but I believe that type of argument or that type of situation and the facts there show that that wasn't an issue. There was an agreement by Kauai Springs to keep working with and try to get it done, even though it didn't happen. That particular issue, I believe, is finished, and the court should rule in our favor.
Mr. Minkin, in the briefs and the conclusions for your briefing, you suggest that this court remand back to the Planning Commission that with instructions that the permits be approved pending declaratory action with CWRM and PUC. Do I understand that?
Not that the permits be approved, because what's actually occurred is that they have been approved based upon the circuit court's ruling, and based upon the circuit court's injunction, the operator was always allowed to continue at once that injunction preliminarily and then permanently came into effect. Their business has not been shut down. So what I'm asking for as relief at the end of the day is basically send it back to the commission, get that information sought, because Appellee makes an argument where the Planning Commission isn't suited to make these types of determinations, force these other agencies to do their respective jobs and responsibilities, but allow Kauai Springs to continue operating during that time frame.
And then what?
Then, depending upon what information we get, we, the Planning Commission, then make a determination as to whether these permits should be granted or revoked or modified.
You know, going back in time to the point at which the commission had the matter before it and considering the Kelly decision that came out right around that time and the public trust obligations, how would you articulate the burden? How do you articulate the criteria that Kauai Springs would had the burden to prove at that point?
Kauai Springs has to, at the end of the day, indicate that what it's doing is going to be integrated and will not be harmful to its neighbors, the environment, and there was nothing in the record that indicated that whatsoever. What was in the record was basically a conclusory statement saying that this is a good use, we're not doing anything more. But the reality is, what effect does it have on the other users? What effect does it have on the water table? What effect does it have for the surrounding community? And that's never been answered. Grow Farm didn't indicate what happens if Kauai Springs pulls this water out. What effect does it have to those folks further down pipeline? That's an issue. That's never been resolved. That's never been rectified.
The 11 other households, I guess, that take water from this line, they are below or above
that
the pipeline?
I know some of them are below.
Okay. And the standard that you referenced, the impact on the neighbors and et cetera, that comes from, is that coming from the use permit criteria?
Yes.
Okay. 20.5.
Yes.
Okay.
I see that my time is up, and I wish to reserve some time because I know Mr. Thomas would be eloquent in his argument, and I would wish to respond to it, at least briefly, if allowed.
Thank you, Mr. Minkin. Mr. Thomas, we're ready for your eloquence.
I'm certainly hope so, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. When the Planning Commission sought and received the input from no less than 9 other state and county agencies, they didn't punt, including, among others, the Water Commission, the Planning Commission, the Public Utilities Commission, the Health Department, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, the Fire Department, the Department of Public Works, and uniformly they come back and say, we don't have a problem with this, this will not impact our jurisdiction, our Kuleana, then the agencies fulfilled its Kelly duties under the public trust to make appropriate assessments and to take reasonable measures to protect the resource. Before I get into that, I wanted to answer a couple of questions. Judge Fujisa, you asked here. I mean, we've all sort of, I think we've come to a point where in the argument that we've at least eliminated some of their contentions of their 6 points of appeal, the first being these implicit holdings that I think it's their first one that says circuit court held that the Planning Commission had no duty under the public trust. And from what I'm hearing today, they've at least conceded that that's not what the circuit court held. The circuit court instead acknowledged that there were Kelly duties and that the Planning Commission fulfilled them when it did all this investigation over the course of the four or five hearings, depending on whether you count the reconsideration, the post-denial reconsideration as a hearing, over the 7 months that they were considering this permit. But Judge Fujita, you asked about the burden of proof and how that sort of dovetails with the duty under the public trust. And I think the simplest way that we would suggest the court look at it is that the Planning Commission, I mean, there's no doubt, the language of the Hawaii Constitution, the language of every Hawaii Supreme Court case dealing with the public trust has said it is the agencies, it is the state government, it is the county government and their agencies that have the duties under the public trust. But of course we have to acknowledge that an applicant for a land use or some other use has the burden of convincing, I suppose, the agency that it is not a violation of the public trust to go forward with whatever permissions are sought. So that is, I think, how, in my mind at least, I've allocated the difference between the duty and how it is. And we don't dispute that, as an applicant, Hawaii Springs had the burden of proof. But remember that the public trust, at least the Hawaii Supreme Court, the way the Hawaii Supreme Court has applied it, has never required perfection. And the greatest example of that is the Kelly case, the one we've been talking about today. And you look at the facts of that, and it's abundantly clear that it doesn't require ultimate knowledge, it doesn't require it only requires, again, appropriate assessments and reasonable measures. Because in that case, you had a gross polluter. I mean, that was a case of dirt runoff on the Big Island attacking of the class AA waters, I mean, the most sacred, the most pure offshore water, salt water, and then by Hokulea, who was commercial entity in the business of making luxury homes. I'd sort of consider that the apex predator of commercial users out there, much more than we have. And yet the court said at the end, the holding of the case is very important. Yes, the county and the state all have duties, but neither violated their public trust duties because they undertook appropriate assessments, they put conditions and permits, and they tried to protect the waters. It so happened that they didn't. But the court said there wasn't enough evidence there to show that they somehow violated their duties.
How do you set realistic criteria in this situation, given what you've just talked about in Kelly?
You talk about
reasonable measures and appropriate assessments. What does that boil down to in this case?
Anytime you're dealing with reasonable standards, as the court has said, Your Honor, you're dealing, of course, with fact-by-fact situations or case-by-case situations. Because the Supreme Court has established that every agency has public trust duties, it's going to vary depending on the case. But with respect to this case, look at what they did. And the question is, do we, as the applicant, have to establish what their duties are? No. They're the agency with the duties. They tell us what they want to know. So in the course of that, they have 4 public hearings, 7 months. They seek input from 9 agencies. And in the course of that, Kauai Springs does everything, responds, does everything that the Planning Commission asks, responds. There's at least 2 reports by the Planning Department. There's numerous site visits. They have testimony from both Knutson, who owns the land where the source is. They have testimony from Grove Farms telling them, you know, we own the pipeline, but we'll show you how it was tapped. Here's where the chlorination plants are, here's who owns what land, here's the map of the thing. And to go back to answer your question, there's 11 on Waila'au, 11 below.
Mm-hmm.
And important point is probably any one of them would have standing in this case to have instituted a contested case, and none of them did.
So water comes from Kahili Mountain,
yes.
Hits Kauai Springs licensed property first, and then goes to the
exactly
homeowners.
I mean, it's a sort of a torturous route, but it does come down from Knudsen Land by what you see it referenced in the record as the school property and the first tank. And there it comes down again, and remember this transmission line, and your Judge Floyd is absolutely right, the transmission line is what's owned by Grove Farms, comes in what is the, on first hits on the licensed property of Kauai Springs. There's a building there that before Kauai Springs began operating was the chlorination plant for those 11 homes. It would come in there, get treated, make sure it was safe, and then go downpipe to the 11 homes and then outward and further on down from there. But what happened is Kauai Springs had a license, and in fact they told the Planning Commission, here's the license, when they asked, do you have rights to the water? And they said, yes, we've licensed it, we bought it from a Knudsen or Grove Farms. Showed where the tap was and how that tap comes in before the chlorination for the homes and then comes down. And so you're dealing with these type of issues. They know exactly how much, they ask how much water is coming through the pipe every day. And Jim Satterfield told them 275,000 gallons a day. They knew exactly how much was coming through that pipe. They said, how much do you want out of there? What are you asking permission for? And to get back to the question of waiver, first of all, there is no procedures to amend, and we suggest that there can't be. And if you look in the record, and I'm afraid I don't have the page citation in front of me, at one point, because in an effort to accommodate the requests of the Planning Commission, Mr. Satterfield said, well, I'll do less. If you don't want to deal with that, tell you what, we'll do less deliveries, we'll do this, do that, do the other thing, and finally settled on 1,000 gallons a day, is what he settled on. And they said, is that what you want? Yes. Are you amending your application? And he said, well, I'm downgrading it, but and the planning commissioner asked the staff planner, does he have to amend and start all over? And she said no, because you're not upping it, that'd be one thing, but he's actually reducing the use in an attempt to accommodate. And I think, Judge Foley, this sort of ties back into the auto-approved deadlines. What could they have done? They're running out of time, as they apparently knew, if they were somehow after 7 months they still hadn't processed this. Ask for more time. Take a look at, under 91-13.5 is a rather interesting statute because it says you shall do this, you shall do this, but you establish the deadlines. Nowhere in 91-13 does the state say here's what the deadlines have to be. It's entirely up to the counties of these time deadlines, so they set them. So they know now that they have public trust duties. There's nothing written in stone except in the Kauai ordinances and the Planning Commission rules that says it has to be 210 days. It can be some reasonable time longer than that.
Going back to the public trust duty, if the Planning Commission had a public trust duty concerning the water,
yes,
could it shirk that responsibility by doing nothing and allowing an automatic approval?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's, no. To answer your question, no. I think the Supreme Court is abundantly clear that they've got to at least look at the situation. And the situation we raised sort of as a hypothetical in our brief is, what if the DMV was dealing with this? Do they have to suddenly go into digging into water issues? And I would suggest that under their theory, it would, because they said, well, we don't know. We're completely ignorant of the effect of a commercial driver's license on the water, because if we hand out a commercial driver's license for a water delivery truck, my gosh, that might somehow damage the resource. The difference in this case would be you have a situation where these issues are coming up anyway. So I think the Supreme Court says it's very clear that in those cases you can't simply say nothing. You do have to make an appropriate assessment given the scope of the permit that the applicant is asking for. So the DMV situation, they can look at it, you have to sort of check it off and say, okay, really, water's not an issue here. But in this case, in some aspects of it, yes, water was. And then the second question under Kelly becomes, okay, were the steps that you took reasonable given the circumstances of what the applicant is asking for, reasonable given the circumstances of what the regulations require, the use permit standards, the class 4 and the special.
That's part of what I asked Mr. Minkin earlier in terms of what the burden of proof would have been, should have been. back when the matter was before the Planning Commission. Given Kelly had just come out on the public trust obligations, how do you tie in what the criteria are that your client had to the burden of proof on?
Yes, I mean, they couch it as show the use is legal. I mean, that's such a vague standard at that point that leaves probably applicants wondering what that means. I mean, to say that water law in Hawaii is so clear that that's a good enough statement to allow your average applicant to go forward, that's really tough. But what it boils down to is we go back again to what the commission, and again, the public trust as interpreted by the Supreme Court in Kelly, turns every agency, at least in some degree, into an agency that has to make these inquiries. They're the ones who know, right? So, I mean, the way that the courts have always said agencies acting within the scope of their expertise are entitled to judicial deference and all that thing, well, that's because we expect agencies and not applicants to have some degree of knowledge of the rules they're administering. Prior to Kelly, there was some question, at least I think the counties had some question as to whether they were obligated under the public trust to do anything except sort of punt it over to the state, but it was abundantly clear after Kelly that no, it's literally every agency. So they can't sit back and say, well,
Mr. Minkin references, for instance, the criteria under 8-20.5, and that's the criteria specific to the use permit.
Yes. Or
8-20.5, yeah, I think it's the use permit. But, I mean, would you agree that that plays a factor in terms of what the burden of proof should be and with the public trust overlay?
Surely. I mean, of course. I mean, it's right there. You look in the ordinances and it says, among other things, land and water considerations. I do have a problem with the other one that says if it will affect water delivery. There's some other portion of the regulation. I think that's a question, and in fact they did check it off. They asked the public utilities, Kauai Public Utilities, who simply came back and said, well, we have no problem with it, provided you tell Kauai Springs that they're not getting county water off of this, and they didn't. But to go back to that, yes, when it's literally in the substantive standards of whether that the Planning Commission is supposed to evaluate in the course of issuing a permit under the ordinances. So they can't not look at it. But the question then becomes, is that enough to qualify under the Kelly standards? Is it reasonable under the circumstances? And we would submit that it was. 7 months, literally they're asking Mr. Satterfield question after question. He's bringing in other people to testify about the scope of his relationship with, they had the agreement, if I recall, with Grove Farms. They had site visits, the planning, this morning I read through the four transcripts of the hearing, or the various hearings, and if you read through them, you can see Barbara Pendragon, the staff planner, telling about the effort she took. She said, I contacted the Water Commission, and they said, we don't have a problem, we don't think we have a problem with this. So the question of those assumptions that they seem to rely on, particularly in their reply brief, where they come out and say, but those PUC letters and the CWARM letters, you have to read those really closely because they're saying, if all of these facts are there, then we don't have a problem, and Kauai Springs has never, ever confirmed to us, the Planning Commission, that those three facts are true. I hate asking the court to read through the transcripts of those hearings, but they do ask those questions. They've been to the source. They've seen what the source looks like. It's in a tunnel sealed up behind. Kauai Springs has absolutely no control over what goes on there. So if Knutson tomorrow decides to shut that off, end of problem. I mean, that's nothing Kauai Springs can really do about it. They knew exactly what the source was like, the engineering or the geology of this, because again, this is a spring. It's not something that needs a pump.
I'm sorry, but I thought the commission was not able to go to the source.
The planners were. The commission wasn't because of Chapter 92 concerns. Okay. You know, you suddenly have to have a public hearing.
You're speaking about the planners.
Yes, okay. The planner was and made a report. But of course, the Planning Commission, subject to the Sunshine Laws, couldn't very well hold a public hearing up the trail. But yeah, it was the planner. Made at least one visit there. They had input from Aqua Engineering, who was Kauai Springs used in response to, or employed in response to the State Department of Health, which regulates bottled water facilities and the standards for what is the difference between, say, spring water and groundwater or artesian water or purified water. There's all these different standards. And they had required Kauai Springs to hire Aqua Engineering to go out and make sure that the runoff of any excess, you think water, after you bottle water, drinking water, it could just run on the ground. No, apparently it has to go into a septic system and be treated that way. But they knew, and they came in and testified, Mr. Satterfield testified that they were ready to be able to tell anything about the engineering of this thing that anybody from the Planning Commission wanted.
Could the Planning Commission, was it within their authority to set conditions to ensure that the SEAWORM, the three hypotheses were in place?
Absolutely. I mean, it's called a conditional use permit. And that's, they do it all the time. In fact, it was discussed in the record. Can't we just grant this subject to clarification of these X, Y, and Z facts? Yes, that would be one option, Judge Foley, about what do you do when you're running out of time? Conditional use permit. Grant subject to, if not, I mean, we see that all the time. And in fact, I think it's a quite regular procedure in addition to asking for more time or it's your rules. If you don't like the time, amend the rules. It wouldn't probably apply to any rule or any permits in process. But if you find that in processing land use permits on the County of Kauai, the 210 days isn't enough, the statute certainly allows you, the Planning Commission, to go back and change your rules. And indeed, you can literally, right now, as of today, under the statute, opt out entirely. So, oddly enough, the legislature went back subsequent to this, amended 9113-5 to allow counties to opt out entirely. And it's entirely conceivable that in the course of processing these permits, that they've determined that, public trust to really undertake our Kelly duties, that we shouldn't have a time limit. This is one of those type of permits that we shouldn't, so we'll opt out with respect to those. But they, in this case, it doesn't matter. So all of those sort of kick in.
Is it constitutional for the county to have automatic approval when they have this public trust doctrine? If we don't consider anything in a timely manner, you get the permit regardless of the public trust document? Would that be constitutional for them to do?
I think there might be a problem if they did literally nothing, if they didn't undertake their Kelly duties in the 210 days.
But when you're arguing you have the permit because of automatic approval, what they did or didn't do doesn't matter.
That's true with respect to the Class 4 and the use permits, which had already expired by the time we get to sort of the events of November, December, 2006, January 2007, there's no question that the special permit, which is, I think, what the major focus here is on, was not subject to remand for auto. It was not auto approved. It was only the first two, the use in the Class 4. But again, that sort of doesn't answer the, or doesn't leave you, our auto approval deadlines unconstitutional under the public trust if they claim that there's something else they need to do. The answer to that is no in this case, is particularly because they had in those cases 105 days and 120 days of looking at these things where they were asking these questions in the course of our four public hearings and getting this type of information. So again, we fall back to the question or the standard that the court set for us in Kelly, that it is a matter of reasonable measures and appropriate investigations. You can't do nothing. I think in the case of where the agency did nothing, said, we don't have the time to deal with this. They're auto-approved on the 105th day. I think at that point, maybe there's a question of whether that would somehow violate their public trust duties if, say, an intervener or a third party came in, like in Kelly, and said, wait a minute, the county violated their public trust by allowing these things to go auto-approval. And then, of course, we have to get the AG down here because all of a sudden we're looking at, Chapter 9113 being unconstitutional in some situations, perhaps. But again, it's easy to say that that's not the situation in this case, but it certainly wasn't the situation in this case in spades because the record is quite clear that they asked them over and over, what is it you want to do? What's the capacity of the pipeline? Hawaii Springs told them everything that it knew about this and more. So,
are all three permits required in order for Kauai Springs to continue operating?
I've never quite figured that one out. We sort of assume they are and have gone from there. I don't know. I mean, the relationship between the use and the Class 4 permit, which is really analyzed under the Class 3 standards, and I've never quite figured out the how those two dovetail together, other than if you get a use permit, I think under the CZO of Kauai, you have to apply for a Class 4. And whether the standards for those two are somehow different, I certainly looked through the regulations and the ordinances, and I can't see anything that sort of jumps out at me.
Real quick, so on that point, in your view, in order to get a Class 4 permit, basically the criteria you think that you would look to are the use permit criteria?
I think, Your Honor, it says the standards are under Class 3, which is sort of the one immediately before that. First, let's start with the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission actually tells us why. The use permit is required because it's not generally permitted with it open. Special because this is a non-enumerated use within the state ag. I mean, there's certain uses that you don't have to apply for a permit at all, but you need to get a special. And a Class 4 permit is required for use permits within the ag. And when you look at the Class 3 standards, the Class 4 standards, it pretty much says go look at the Class 3. And that gives you the time deadlines, but it really doesn't tell you too much about...
Right, those are procedures, right?
Those are procedures.
It's
it really
not the
doesn't
criteria.
Tell you what the standards are.
Right.
So I'm afraid I'm left sort of wondering what those criteria are.
So at this juncture, though, there's no other criteria that you would point to that are required for the Planning Commission to consider for a Class 4 permit?
No.
Okay.
The two substantive criteria are the under the Kauai law of for the use, and then under Chapter 205 for the special.
Okay.
So, yes.
So, back to the question of do you need all three permits? At this juncture, the parties have been proceeding with the presumption that all three permits are required.
Correct.
For the operation.
We have. And we think they were auto, the Class 4 was auto approved, so we sort of lump it in with the use permit. Although, you know, we've never looked at that, and in fact, we haven't challenged that, whether we actually needed one or not.
Okay.
We just decided to go with the flow, so to speak, and apply for it. If the court, there's a couple of points I wanted to make before I wrap up on the waiver issue. Again, we asked the court to take a look at the transcript, and they said, do we need to reboot, essentially, because he's downgraded what he wants, you know, the amount. Nothing has changed about the building, nothing has changed about the water system, but in the course of trying to accommodate some of the concerns the Planning Commission may have had, Mr. Satterfield says, you know, I'll scale it back down, how's that? And if I need to go larger, I'll come back to you. If I need to go larger, I might have to move to another property.
You know, under the Circuit Court's ruling right now, Kauai Springs is allowed to continue operating.
Correct.
And there's no specificity in terms of, I think, the scope of the permit.
Correct.
How does Kauai Springs read that ruling?
We're bound by what we said in the Planning Commission, and they said, is this what you want? Repeatedly?
Thousand gallons?
Yes. So we just assumed it was what was in the course of that, that was the ultimate issue before the Planning Commission. That's what they denied when they said no permits, and so that's what we're getting, that's what we assumed we're getting. So look at what the Circuit Court decided or actually found, that Kauai Springs didn't ask for extra time, didn't withdraw or amend its application, and in fact the only time it was actually asked, would you be willing to extend the deadline? Says, yes, we would be willing, you know, Planning Commissioners, if certain things happen. Like we can put that in writing, and I forget, there was a condition about something. And none of those ever took place. So that was the closest we've ever come, and that doesn't qualify at all under the Supreme Court's Kukui Plaza standards of knowing, intentional relinquishment of a known right. There's even a question when you look at the Supreme Court's Brown against Thompson decision, Justice Levinson in that case suggesting that if the applicant doesn't know about their rights, it's going to be awfully hard for them to knowingly waive something, even by conduct that they don't know they had. And there's certainly nothing in this record that shows that Kauai Springs was aware at the time of the auto-approved deadlines, and under the way the rules are structured, it doesn't have to be aware. So the mere presence, showing up with a lawyer, I mean, that's not something that by itself would waive. It has to be pretty clear that that's, you're walking away from these rights. And really, the only thing, they argue that the applicant essentially needs to stop cooperating, stop showing up, and in effect shut down the process to demand, in order to be deemed not to have waived under that standard. And of course, that's really an unworkable standard because that shifts the burden from them, the agency, to meet the deadlines, to us to have some kind of manifestation that we haven't waived it by conduct. And I see my time's running out. And if I may, Your Honor, may I wrap up? The court has
until the red light questions.
All right, thank you. I hope I've been eloquent, as Mr. Minkin has said. First of all, we didn't impliedly waive the auto-approved deadlines for the use of Class 4 permits, and accepting their theory would essentially eliminate the automatic approval sanction. And that's a label that this court put on it in an unpublished opinion called Botner. It said it's a sanction. It's an auto-approved sanction, and shift the burden from them to us to show that we haven't waived some kind of conduct that the agency might interpret as waivers. And remember, these are deemed approved statutes and ordinances, not deemed waived statutes, which is really the theory that they're advancing. And then we get to sort of the real, I think, the issue in this case is that under Kelly, this is with respect to the third permit, the special permit, agencies aren't required to bury their heads in the water, as the Planning Commission argues, and say, when faced with this record that we have in this case, say, we don't know, we still don't know what's going on. So their public trust theory really contravenes the Supreme Court's quite explicit Kelly standards and invites wholesale denial of fairly routine land use permits such as these, unless the applicant somehow overcomes the burden of disproving the agency's unarticulated fears, or whatever they might be. And so there's really no principle in the public trust doctrine that allows the agency to respond to an applicant's complete compliance with everything that the agency asked of it over the course of 7 months, and then, on the eve of your auto-approved deadline, deny the application for the sole reason that there's no evidence in the record and that there might be outstanding regulatory processes, whatever they might be. So forcing an applicant in those circumstances to overcome this, it's really an open-ended and standardless standard, and it's an impossible burden of proof to meet. There'd literally be no case in which an applicant could meet that standard of proof if the agency wanted to assert it. And that really, when you get back to it, is the essence of arbitrary and capricious agency action under 9114, is when you come in not knowing what the standards are, what you have to do in order to secure your permit. So for that reason, we ask the court affirm on all counts and not remand this case to the circuit court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Minkin?
Thank you.
And you were eloquent.
I'm relieved.
Before I begin, I'd like to thank the MEC for their briefs. I'd also like to, in the record, indicate that I was honored to work with John Van Dyke, who wrote the amicus brief on behalf of OHA. It goes back, he and I first met in 1982 when I was a law student of his, and to come full circle and work with him on this particular case, at least as the one aspect, I will cherish that forever. What do we have here? We have Apelli saying, we didn't waive it. As Judge Foley indicated, Mr. Minkin, it sounds like what you're arguing is waiving, but really what we're saying here is that there was an assent. There is a knowing acknowledgement that the process was continuing. They participated in it. They didn't sit back. They didn't argue at any point in time until later on appeal, after the permits were denied, that they were deemed approved. And that's why I pointed out in the very beginning that it wasn't just Mr. Satterfield, because I think that's an issue that we would have with a pro se applicant. But in this particular case, it wasn't just a pro se applicant. It was an applicant represented by counsel, an applicant represented by a licensed attorney. And not once did Harvey Cohen ever say, gotcha, didn't do it, because he didn't believe that it had taken place. He wanted to continue to work, and he felt that what was being done at the end of the day, the denial, was a drastic result. What do we have? We have in the code, County Code 8-20.5 standards, if a use permit may be granted only if the Planning Commission finds that the establishment, maintenance, or operation of the construction, development, activity, or use in the particular case is a compatible use and is not detrimental to health, safety, peace, morals, comfort, and general welfare of persons residing or working in the neighborhood of the proposed use, or detrimental or injurious to property and improvements in the neighborhood, or to the general welfare of the community, and will not cause any substantial harmful environmental consequences on the land of the applicant or on other lands or waters. That was never answered to the satisfaction of the Planning Commission.
Mr. Minkin, the Planning Commission's decision in its conclusions of law, though, clearly referenced that one of the things that it found or concluded the applicant had not carried its burden with regard to was that the use of the water does not violate any applicable law administered by CWRM, the PUC, or any other applicable regulatory agency. And I think what Mr. Thomas is pointing to is that is an unworkable standard. Is that the standard that they were held to in this case?
I don't think it's an unworkable standard. I think that information can be gathered and sought from those various entities and those agencies. And what we have here is nothing of the sort being done. We have the other agencies at the state level basically saying, based on assumptions, we don't opine other than to say it probably doesn't affect it. I think that what happens here is we have a situation where the public trust doctrine through Kelly is now being highlighted. And I think that if you look at what was being presented, and this always comes down to a determination, right? Is there credible, sufficient evidence to carry the burden of persuasion? Not just the burden, but the power of persuasion. That wasn't done here at all. Because if you look at what was being stated by Mr. Satterfield, by himself, through his counsel, there were conclusions. That was it, without the necessary stepping stones to get to those conclusions. And that, when I read the record, is what the Planning Commission had its problem with. I don't think it's an insurmountable burden. I don't think it's a problem at all for an applicant to do that. Mr. Thomas referenced that the court basically acknowledged that Kelly applied. And yes, it did acknowledge that at one point in its conclusions of law. But focusing on conclusion of law 72, and this makes me crazy when you have double negatives. Basically, there is nothing in the record of this case to show that the Planning Commission did not fulfill any duty it may have under the public trust. Wait, didn't you just say earlier that it has a duty under the public trust? And now you're saying it may have. This is the problem. The court, to me, the trial court, the first level, basically didn't acknowledge wholeheartedly that the Planning Commission has that duty. It basically indicates, well, there's a duty. You may do certain things, and by sending it out to those state agencies, you did it. You accomplished it. No. Kelly tells us that the Planning Commission has its own duty and responsibility, and the responses it got from those other agencies was insufficient as a matter, both on the evidentiary as well as what was required under the statute. With all of that, this case should be remanded back to the Planning Commission, all the way back to the Planning Commission, to basically follow up with those agencies, do what's necessary, and get the evidence, and put the applicant to its test. Burden of proof, burden of persuasion, produce the evidence. Don't tell me it's not going to happen, it's not going to affect, because what does 8-20.5 tell us? It's not just the property of the applicant. What's going on? This is not water that's being used by 11 homes down pipe. This is water that's now being sold. What does this do to the actual overall effect of the groundwater? No one knows. Has that been done? Has a hydrologist been retained? Has anyone studied that particular issue? Pearl Harbor Aquifer, not the same as it was. People used to say, oh, 20, 30 years, you'll be drinking that water that flows from the Coal Laos down to the ocean because it's going to go through the Pearl Harbor Aquifer. That aquifer doesn't exist like it did 30 years ago. What effect does this particular operation have on the groundwater? With all of that said, thank you for this opportunity. This case should be reversed and remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Very well argued on both sides. We'll take the matter under advisement. Thank you.